dating back to the start of the 2007 season, Joey Votto has almost 200 more walks than anybody else in baseball. He's got 1,338 of them. Second on that list is Carlos Santana at 1,148. Nobody else has over 1,000. Walks, they haunt. They haunt on offense. They haunt on defense. It's a very important part of the game. And, you know, the Cincinnati Reds have been kind of reluctant to emphasize that at the best possible ways. Joey Votto has been kind of dragged through the media for most of his career because he's more than willing to wait for the perfect pitch before he starts to swing. There's nothing wrong with that. Why make bad contact? Wait for your perfect pitch and knock the snot out of it. That's kind of what he's been doing. The pitchers, on the other hand, have kind of had a hard time finding the strike zone. Although, when you look up at the list of pitchers the Reds rolled out last year, it's kind of unsurprising that they had that high of a walk rate. You kind of look at some of the departures that they've had since then, and they got nearly 60 starts out of guys like Mike Minor and Chase Anderson and Reaver San Martin, who's still going to be in the bullpen mix this year, Justin Dunn, who's around also. Guys like Jeff Hoffman were in that mix, too. You look up at who they've replaced all of those departures with, especially trading Tyler Mahle, Luis Castillo, and whatnot. It's Luke Weaver, and that's pretty much it. So walks were probably going to be a pretty prevalent part of the 2023 Reds. Assuming Joey Votto gets back on offense, he might even provide some of those for the good side as well. Anyway, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting to kind of reboot the former Red Reporter podcast for a while now. We've been kind of waiting for our perfect pitch to make our first swing. And here we are, and we're doing it with as the Walks Will Haunt podcast. New name, new brand, probably find a logo at some point along the way. But talking about things from a little bit different angle than we did the last time we did all of this, which has been, admittedly, about 2 years. And in that time, the Cincinnati Reds have chosen to throw themselves into a blender, hit puree, and see what's left. We got a lot of different things to talk about, and we're going to try to do that with a twinge of optimism when we can, perpetual cynicism. This is the Cincinnati Reds we're talking about, after all. But try to do so with a lens of being realistic these days, which is what we're talking about: a team that's not going to spend any money, who has owners that are as obnoxious as they are reticent to spend money. And a team that has been pretty much in the doldrums for the better part of 30 years that looks once again like they're still a couple of years off. That said, there's going to be some interesting aspects about this particular team. We've got some good players that we're going to be able to cover this year, along with a mixed in kind of ragtag bunch of guys who probably won't be here all year, might not even make it for more than a couple games. But it is what it is. It's the Reds. We're going to love them. We're going to watch them. We're going to hate them. We're going to watch them. And that's kind of how it is and who we are. We're still here doing this after all these years. So I'm Wick Terrell. I'm your host for the Walks Will Haunt podcast once again. Tonight I'm joined by a couple longtime Red Reporter colleagues and friends and peers. Brandon Grayling, BK. Brian Baseball Jones is also joining us as well. Welcome, guys. Thank you for joining me on this particular iteration of looking forward to being optimistic about Reds baseball again. BK, what are your thoughts on just where the Reds sit right now, given the entire massive cull of players that we've watched happen over the last couple of years since the last time we really sat down to talk about them?
Yeah, man, it's been a couple of years, hasn't it? In Reds land, so it's, you know, I honestly don't know anything about these players. So I like most people here in Cincinnati, I have mostly tuned out of the Reds. Obviously, we have plenty of other distractions that are taking our time here. Obviously, the Bengals just made it to their second straight AFC championship game. SG Cincinnati made the playoffs for the first time last year. We have one great college basketball program poised to make another NCAA tournament. And, you know, the Reds just kind of are there. And that's just kind of how I feel about it. This, you know, hey, drive by the ballpark, I'll see, you know, oh, cool, it's the ballpark. Remember that. So, you know, but that said, obviously as a kind of a prospect junkie and – you know, I'm excited to see the guys that are kind of waiting in the wings, excited to see more Joey Votto, you know, even if he's a shell of his former self, at the very least he will be entertaining. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see just kind of how these guys develop and But you know, I think that where we go from here is really the main kind of talking point with this team. Just in that, you know, the Castellinis are reportedly you know, quietly shopping the team, and so there could be an ownership change at some point. And I think that, you know, I think that that's very necessary to bring some optimism into this, and really just to kind of jumpstart a fan base that has just completely lost track of what is going on with this this franchise at this point.
I think that's a pretty good segue. Real quick, is that this time last year, I wrote a little bit about that earlier today at Red Reporter. Where we were this time last year, we were stuck in a lockout, but we had seen how austere the Reds had chosen to go with the Wade Miley DFA or put him on waivers and got claimed, rather. Tucker Barnhart, basically just them saying, somebody take him so we don't have to pay $1 million buyout. We knew that once the lockout ended, things were going to get worse. The moment the lockout ended, things got way worse. They dumped Eugenio Suarez, Jesse Winker, Sonny Gray in short order. They brought in guys on extremely short, if not minor league contracts, guys like Albert Almora and Colin Moran, who they got like 600 plate appearances between the two of them or something like that. Like, things got bad last year. The Reds aren't tied to guys like that anymore. They've got Votto, yes. But Moose is gone. Shogo's gone. There's no Mike Miners. They did none of those moves this year. Everybody we see play this year, starting at opening day, might be really bad. They might be worse than 62-100 bad, but you don't get the impression that it's the kind of roster that where they're tied to players, and hopefully everybody out there is going to get better the more that they play, whereas last year that was certainly not the case. It does kind of make you wonder if they have started gutting everything possible to get all their liabilities off the asset sheet. So suddenly liabilities off the asset sheet, good Lord, liabilities off their bottom line, to where they become a little bit more marketable to potentially be put up for sale, which is, God, that's intriguing. That might be the most intriguing aspect of, here we are, day before pitchers and catchers report.
Not wrong. About, yeah.
the optimism of potentially selling them being the biggest optimism here. Brian Jones, what are your thoughts on that? How about that? How about we lead in with that on where you think the future of the Reds franchise could be beyond just the on-field stuff? And if that's something that maybe we're seeing the first glimmer of happenings here.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, I'm really optimistic about the future because honestly, it can't get a whole lot worse. It's pretty bad shape. And I don't see that, like, I mean, even if we tried, it'd be hard to get a lot worse. The downside is, it may be a while before it actually gets better. So in the long run, things will swing back. I'm sure they will, but we could still be in for a rough road here. You know, I really wish that it's the kind of spot in the team that I wish that we could just say, you know what, let's just play all the great prospects we got. Let's put in the kids. If we suck for a couple of years, that's okay. They're going to get the reps in. They're going to learn. And like all of that talent's going to come out. But, you know, that being said, the farm is not exactly stuffed full of greatness. So it may be a while.
When was the last, I'm just trying to think league-wide, when was the last time a team went full gut rebuild, turned everything over to the prospects, and then just let them play out, and 2 or 3 years later it worked? You know, like,
I feel like it's happened a handful of times, but not recently. I'm trying to remember, like, remember those old, like, the Tigers teams, like, right before they got good, they had a couple of seasons where they were, you know, at some, I think Mike Maroth lost like 25 games or something crazy like that. And
yeah.
But they just stuck with, the thing that I remember about that is they just stuck with those guys and they just said, we're playing the kids, you know, they'll figure it out eventually. And it, and you know, it took them a couple of seasons, too, but right? The Rays?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah,
it's been a while, but you know, back in the day, the Rays like definitely had a couple of years there where they on in their existence where they were just like, we're just going to play the kids, and you know, a bunch of them turned out.
Bunch of them did turn out. There's no doubt about that.
But the problem, the players turn out, but it doesn't really necessarily lead to team success, and so
right. True. And not to mention, since the last time that happened, I'm pretty sure every team in baseball, perhaps other than the Reds, has hired away every person who ever came through the Rays front office. so now they're stuck competing against them, their old selves in that regard, yep. too. So, right. I mean,
and in the meantime, the Reds have only brought in like all the jockeys and all the Bill Bavases and like given all those guys jobs while everyone else hires like the hot new talent.
How little turnover there's been in the front office, despite the fact that there's been nothing of note in the win column for ever. It's kind of baffling. It really is.
Think of those guys in the front office, Wick. Where are they going to go?
Yeah, where are they going to go?
Where are they going to go?
That's a very good point. Where are they going to go? Well, how about this? Let's pivot quickly to the good about what the Cincinnati Reds have right now, because there is some. There's not none. There's some. That's how you don't lose 162 games. You got to have something that's going to win you 60. And the Reds do have that. They've got that. And in theory, if everything breaks perfectly well, maybe that's 70, according to some of the projections that have come out recently. But what would you say the strength of this particular team is? It's got to be the starting rotation, right? And we're talking about a starting rotation that give me 1 second here as I turn my attention back to a note that I should have had a little bit more prevalent. The 2022 Cincinnati Reds got 62 starts from Mike Minor, Luis Sessa, Vlad Gutierrez, TJ Zoik. You remember TJ? Chase Anderson, Justin Dunn, Robert Duggar, Reaver San Martin. They traded away Tyler Mahle and Luis Castillo, and they replaced all those players with who looks like to be the only addition to that list of starting pitcher options for this year, which is Luke Weaver, who was a reliever last year. And still here I am saying that I think the starting rotation is going to be the strength of the Cincinnati Reds. Let's give credit where credit's due. Hunter Green, number 2 overall draft pick of the Reds, looks really freaking good. Nick Lodolo, seventh overall pick of the Reds, had a tremendous rookie season with all. He looks really, really good. Graham Ashcraft looks to be the kind of great find of a draft, and also the kind of reason why you saw them give some money to Derek Johnson and give him the pitching guru title of the Reds. That's a top three that, you know, all coming off the rookie season, all with, you know, 5+ years of eligibility left. That looks to be the strength right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so, especially with that top end talent with Green and Lodolo, especially. You know, both of them, you know, have had their struggles since coming up, but they've also both flashed that those little bits of brilliance that make you believe that they're going to figure it out at this level. You brought that big list up, and it's like, hey, Luke Weaver is not going to be a bad addition to that. If only that he can eat innings and, you know, he'll be fine. It's just, you know, they just need to kind of let those guys do their thing. And, you know, they have the young talent coming up, but you know, I like what I've seen from Justin Dunn. I don't know if he's necessarily a starter, but you know, he could potentially do the job. But then, you know, you get to the point where I think a couple of years down the line, those guys will have enough experience. You'll be able to bring in, you know, a Wade Miley type level guy, where, you know, a veteran that knows what they're doing, has been around the block, and can kind of help solidify things. But, you know, I think that this is going to be a really interesting test of just, you know, there's no Mike Minor this year, right? Nobody they brought in like that is just like, you know, there's nobody who is going to stand in the way of these younger players. You know, even Luke Weaver's on the right side of 30, right? And that's kind of where I get that idea. But then, you know, Sessa, it sounds like Sessa's going to start. We'll see how that goes. It seems like he's a better reliever than a starter, but, you know, I'm interested to see what happens.
I think you, I mean, to your point, there's potential there, but we got to keep our sort of expectations set for this year. If Luke Weaver's your number four, and then you're hunting around for a number five, like if any of those top three yeah. gets a sore pinky, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that too.
Instead of 70.
You know, and
yeah,
if Hunter Green gets a sore pinky, he's going off the DL for a month because you're not going to waste. You're not going to risk that guy making, you know, getting some kind of injury that he can't come back from.
Right, and that list I rolled out there, that wasn't 21 starts. That was 62 starts. You know, that's how much they depended on those guys last year, despite Castillo and Malley being there and Green, Lodolo, and Ashcraft doing what they did. You know, it's certainly an instance where, you know, those three guys, Green, Lodolo, Ashcraft, that's who you build around. That's not who you hang out to dry. And the Reds haven't built around them at all. So if you don't let them hang out to dry and you don't build around them, my God, we're going to see a whole lot of just completely random pitchers out there this year, which, you know, if the season doesn't matter, so be it. But, right.
maybe you'll get one of those, you know, those waiver wire guys that, you know, comes in and, you know, ends up just clicking in Cincinnati and he can be a piece of the next good team.
Maybe Connor Overton truly is the next Dan Straley, and we get a 176.1 inning ceiling in the season out of him. Yeah,
yeah.
That'd be ideal. But again,
they may have the opposite problem from you know, the old guys blocking the young guys. They might have the problem that, you know, there's so many innings to take up, and you know, you end up putting a huge load on these young guys who haven't seen that before. Like, they better be careful they don't just sort of fall into overworking them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be tremendous, since especially I led that entire segment with this is the best of what the Reds have right now. It's not what they have. It's the best of what they have. So it would be a dream to not run that into a ground in a year when you've not invested around them, so that when Elly De La Cruz and Nuelvi Marte make their debuts in 2024, there's no pitching left because you burned it all in a year where you had no hitting.
Why are they going to debut in 2024? What are we saving? Like, put them in the lineup, let them face major league hitting.
That would be tremendous. Yeah. I will say, Elly and Nuelvi have such limited, even what Nuelvi didn't have it. Elly's got limited double A experience. You know, that's not something that has prevented any other team out there from promoting their guys straight to the big leagues. Look no further than what Atlanta has done over the last decade and a half of aggressively promoting their guys. Mm-hmm. What it means, though, is the back end of that from the Atlanta comp is they've been willing to stretch themselves and extend those guys immediately, which I don't see the Reds doing.
Selling the team, you know, a new owner
A new owner very well might going to. But on the flip side of that, if you're not going to extend them, that means you're already obviously starting their arbitration clock, which, at, you know, 21 years old, I'm not sure it's something they want to do. It's the kind of thing where if you look up and, you know, I think it's Cespedes Family Barbecue is going to do something on Fox Sports, which is basically not ranking the top prospects in a team system, but rather ranking the top players under age 26 in a league system, in a team system. Mm-hmm. If you look at what the Reds had right there, it'd be a tremendous amount of talent, none of which is locked up. And it's really hard to see where a team goes when they're unwilling to lock up the guys who have already made it to the big leagues and also not promote the guys aggressively who are younger. It just kind of seems like you're burning both ends of the wick there, to use my own name.
To be fair, that's nice on pun brand. There.
Yes. Yeah. Yes,
so,
it is.
But like, so Wick, like the question I would have for you there is like, of those guys that the Reds do have, is there anybody that, like, what would it take, do you think, for them to do that with Hunter Green or Nick Lodolo or even somebody a little bit farther off? What if, you know, what if they do kind of what the Reds or what the Rays did with, you know, what Wander Franco came up is the comp that I keep on thinking about. Obviously not as highly respected as a prospect of somebody like Ellie, but you know, I think that, like, what if they handled it the same way is what I mean.
I mean, it'd be tremendous. It'd be the kind of thing that would show a dedication to a future of the franchise, which they've not done in really, I mean, even if you look back at some of the deals that they've doled out, it's been since Votto, since they've really said this is a cornerstone. You know, the Jay Bruce deal was what, 6-7 years, which was, you know, similar timing to Votto.
But that was mostly just buying out arbitration, I think, right?
Yeah, in most part, yeah. But even like the Devin Mesoraco contract, which turned bad, that was still only 4 years and like $27-28 million. They haven't turned inwards to a big time player who has broken out early and really committed to them in a while.
And, yeah, just I mean, you know, Homer Bailey is the last one that really that I think of there.
Yeah, and it, you know, you can see why maybe they're not doing it, because they picked the wrong players to do in that regard. Right. But if you're not going to do that, and you're also not going to invest in free agency, then
why do you own a baseball team, right?
So exactly.
That's kind of where I end up.
Clear. This all shakes out pretty clear at this point, right? So clearly there's some good opportunities to sign some of the lock up some of these young guys, let a few of those guys get in there and play, see who's looks like they're going to pan out, make your bets. We know that this ownership isn't going to do it. So, Wick, you need to just get off your butt and buy the team.
I do, don't I? Crap. I did not buy my Powerball tickets tonight. That was a mistake. That's a Monday lost.
Imagine winning Powerball and deciding to spend that money on the Cincinnati Reds. Holy hell.
Oh, God. How tremendous that would be. How tremendous that would be.
Start throwing it away.
Lord. Well, how about this? So before we actually get to big league play, there's going to be the World Baseball Classic. Back again after a couple of years. And the Cincinnati Reds are going to have some pretty prominent players playing, despite the fact that Joey Votto is not going to be the first baseman for Canada, which is odd because I feel like he's been a part of this for a big portion of the last decade and a half. BK, I know you've brushed up on some of this lately. You want to kind of take a view on this?
I think the Reds total, you know, have I think it's 16 players that I saw that are actually playing in the tournament. You know, most of them are going to be minor leaguers. You have a handful of big league guys, you know, Alexis Diaz being kind of the main guy there. I think he'll probably be one of the kind of most used pitchers for Puerto Rico. And then Luis Sessa is going to be playing for Mexico. And you've got a handful of guys, but then, you know, I don't know. It seems like they kind of go towards the journeyman minor league guys that end up signing with the Reds, and you know, and so you know they've got so like somebody like Teyron Guerrero is counts on the Reds list, who didn't play for the Reds last year, right? He came to the Reds for he might have. But he came to the Reds from Japan, signed, you know, this past offseason, and he's going to be playing for the Colombian team alongside Raver San Martin. But, you know, definitely some interesting guys in here, especially when you look at, you know. No, so that's the thing that is really confusing to me is that you don't really see a ton of prospects, like prospecty guys.
That's really in there.
Like,
right?
I mean, it's interesting that
they don't want to get hurt, or is there something?
Yeah, it must be something like that. You know, especially because when you look back on, you know, the previous ones, like the very first and second ones that we saw, you know, you saw a lot of guys on the Cuban team in Japan,
right,
who were kind of playing domestically and really made a name for themselves in this tournament. You don't really get the prospect type guys in this. It tends to be, especially in the, you know, the nations that are kind of more geared towards having big leaguers. You know, obviously Dominican Republic is going to try and win the whole thing.
Of course.
But then so you're not seeing the Dominican prospects making that team.
Right, just because the competition is high. But like,
yeah, some of the exactly. other
teams, I think it's too bad, right? It'd be better for the Classic
yeah,
if they
yeah.
could get more of those, you know, up
yeah.
and coming.
And I mean, but there. And the interesting thing I think that you're seeing too is like guys like Ian Gabeau, who, you know, I guess he pitched for the Reds in, you know, what, 30 something games last year, but he's actually going to be playing for Great Britain. Which
yeah
okay
Great Britain has enough players to field the whole team,
right?
Ichibo's dad is actually a legendary rugby player, apparently, which I had to look up when I found out he was pitching for the UK as well. I was like, wait a minute, oh, that's actually kind of awesome. I should have known that by now.
Yeah, that's it. Like, and so that's the thing that I love about this tournament is just like there's just so many cool like weird stories like that. And it'll be really interesting to kind of follow it and follow these kind of lesser known Reds and see what they do. You know, looking at, especially if you look at some of these teams and see even former Reds, I think is really interesting. You know, looking at the Netherlands team, I think is going to be a blast to follow.
Yeah. Honkball's always a good time.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, but you, when you look at former Reds on that team, you have Didi Gregorius, you have Vladimir Ballantyn, Roger Bernardina, Juan Kohler Solbarren.
Yes.
You remember JC Solbarren?
Yes.
You know, all those guys. Pedro Strop is on that team. I didn't even know he was. Didn't know he would have been eligible for the Netherlands, but here we are. Chadwick Trump. Do you remember Sicknarf Loopstock?
I did. I do remember Sicknarf.
All those guys were in the Red system at some point.
One of the prides of Farmers Only for at least a couple of months. Yes.
Yeah. No, exactly. That's how I remember all these guys. I remember. Yeah. You know. And so it's fun to just kind of get those guys on a national TV and get them, you know, playing in front of the world and seeing what happens.
And they're going to be on Fox Sports, so they should be fairly available to most people.
Yeah.
Not blocked or
until they go bankrupt like Bally did.
Boom. Yeah. I guess that's the other kind of interesting aspect of, if you're one of those few who are out there still trying to actively watch Reds baseball this year, what that's going to look like, and where are you going to find that? Who's going to pay to cover this?
That's a great point. I honestly have no idea. And so as the only one on this particular podcast located here in Cincinnati, I'm blacked out from, you know, getting MLB TV or anything like that. So YouTube TV is my streamer of choice, and they have not had any of the Bally channels since I've had it.
So what you're going to need to get a boat and go park it in the middle of the Ohio River and point it against the current and drop a big anchor and then roll up a piece of paper and stick it in your ear. And you should be able to hear enough about what's going on there. And you might actually catch a couple home run balls from whichever team is playing against the Reds that day.
Yeah. I'll have to get like a drone that will go over the river or something.
You guys know maybe I
could probably charge for that.
Rob Butcher will actually be out there shooting down your drone.
That's true.
Back in the day, we had to struggle with this problem all the time, right? I grew up on the West Coast as a Reds fan, and you had to check the newspaper and look at the box score and reconstruct the game from last night, and you didn't know what any of the players looked like. So, you know, it'll be maybe like we can just sort of embrace that nostalgic, you know, baseball on the radio kind of feel, and we go back to, you know, newspaper box scores.
I mean, there was a day where you would log or not log in. No, it was well before logging in. You would turn the dial when you got in the car to the right, so it clicked once, and then you turned a little more so you could hear it, and then you turned the other dial to 700. And when you got there, within the first maybe 30 seconds or so, there would be something hyping the fact that it was a 50,000 watt station that you could hear from coast to coast at times when like when the wind was blowing right. And that's how you could catch Marty and Joe back in the day, and you know, driving home from a soccer tournament in Beaver Creek, Ohio, or from Memphis back to Lexington or whatever it was, like. You know, oh, hey, it's 10 o'clock and the Reds are on the West Coast. Let's see if we can get Vin Scully on here or see if we can get Marty calling the game from there. And boom, you'd find him and listen to him for an hour or so. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's how we can see the Reds once again when they're not as watchable as they used to be. Maybe they're more listenable than they have been in recent years.
Yeah, there's nothing ambient sound of a baseball game on the radio.
There's nothing like it, man. Absolutely nothing like it. So.
So yeah, shout out to Tommy Thrall and the Cowboy. I'm all in on you guys. Let's go.
We can find all sorts of good in this team. Look at us.
We can. I mean, let's be honest. It's still baseball. You know, the Reds are going to play Aaron Judge and Mike Trout in the next couple of years. Like they are one of the 30 Major League Baseball teams. It's one of something I feel like I've been reiterating left and right, but. As for the depths that they have fallen to, that is still something they are able to boast about. And we might see Elly De La Cruz maybe opening day. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe he comes in and does the Chris Bryant thing where he hits 9 home runs in Cactus League play, and they're like, well, at most we can hold him down for 14 days to try to keep a hold of him, which didn't work for the Cubs either. But you know, maybe that's what it is. He just slaps him in the face and says, hey, I hit better from the left side. You can't shift anymore. And I'm awesome. I'm the future. Yep. And we see that sooner than later. You know, I'll give the Reds some credit here. A couple of years ago, we did not see Jonathan India coming at all. And he just kicked the door down, put up a 4-win season, won Rookie of the Year, and that was that. Maybe we see that Jonathan India again. You know, that'd and if nice. We do, that's something. It's not nothing. Maybe we see a full season of Tyler Stevenson. God forbid we see at least 450-500 plate appearances of him. There is optimism, not necessarily for what 2023 as a whole is going to be, but the pieces that could and should and will still be around beyond 2023 could have really good years to make this time next year. We've got a lot more optimism that takes us beyond 33 minutes. Maybe we get to 53 minutes and we're still optimistic at this point on the first podcast of the preseason. you know, there is enough there that could break right. It's just shit. Nothing's broken right for
Here's the thing. If one of those things breaks wrong, this is an 105 loss team.
That's right. But I think, I mean, the only way that I'm going to stay sane through this season is if I completely let go of how many losses we got, except, you know, how funny it is that we did bad. If they can show the sort of progress of getting some of these young guys, let's see Hunter Green take the next step. Let's see Nicodolo take the next step. Let's bring up those young guys and give them a chance to start playing. And if we see some of that development, and if that pairs with any kind of motion on ownership change, then, you know, I think that's what you're looking for as a winning season.
Yeah. And I mean, going back to our other point, you know, something I just thought of, like, you know, not being able to watch the team, you know, here, especially not knowing about Bally sports and stuff, you know, I'm going to be really excited to go down to the ballpark on a Tuesday night and watch, you know, go watch Hunter Green for $10, you know, and just kind of keep track of these guys in person, because, you know, it's going to be, you know, there is enough of that talent here to where, you know, I'll be telling my grandkids, like, hey, I went to go see Hunter Green when he was just starting out and blah, blah, blah. And I'm
like, all right, maybe this is the year that the Reds will put to rest pitcher win-loss record as something that is an actual thing that people care about in Reds country.
I don't feel that, man.
Hunter Green goes out and strikes out 13 guys and gives up 2 runs over 6 innings. And the Reds lose 9-3 because the bullpen gives up 7 runs in 2.5 innings. You know, and he goes 6-17 with a 3.50 ERA and leads the league in strikeouts. Like, it's like it's shaping up to be that kind of year, you know. Mm-hmm. But I would take that in a heartbeat, you know. If Hunter Green throws 180 innings, he's going to strike out 250 batters. And if he does that, yeah, he might go 6-17 or worse. But he's shown us that he is the pitcher that the Reds always hoped he was going to be. And all he needs is a bullpen and somebody to hit for him. And those are things that, in theory, if you've got enough money to own a Major League Baseball team, you can pay to find after the fact. You can't find guys that can strike out 250 guys in 180 innings. And that's what this year is all about, is making sure that the guys they think they've found who can do that can actually do that. And it'll at least be exciting to watch that minute tidbit of the 26-man roster attempt to perform up to par, because they do have a couple guys that look like they very well could do that. And I mean, let's be honest, like back in the origin days of Red Reporter, can you imagine like thinking about like a starting pitcher who might be like a 5-win pitcher? Like these were like the Elmer DeSins days. Like they, a 5-win pitcher just didn't exist. No. Like five-win hitters popped up like they were growing on trees, but you didn't have a pitcher in this organization to save your life. The Reds might have a couple. They might have three. They might have 4 or 5, depending on what Andrew Abbott and Brandon Williamson can step up and provide later on. You know, it's a little bit of a script flip, so to speak. But it's going to be your
question though, Whip. I think another way that this could get pretty hairy pretty quick is that Lodolo and Green could go out and have good seasons and still give up a lot of hits and a lot of stolen bases because of these rule changes. And everybody's going to be out for their heads that they're terrible, even though if you look at them relative to what everybody else is doing in the league, it could be a pretty good performance.
Yeah. So we've got shifting restrictions this year. We've got a limited ability for pitchers to hold runners at first base by throws over. We've got larger bases, which I think we said earlier or on the pre-podcast, reduced the distance from first to second base by about almost 5 inches, which doesn't sound like a lot until you realize how many times you've watched replays of players sliding into second base, and 4.5 inches made a lot of difference. We're going to see a little bit of a different baseball game this year than we've seen in the past. Brian, what are your thoughts on what jumps out initially at you in terms of what the rule changes have done and potentially how this Reds roster that we all know fairly little about at this point might be best equipped or worst equipped to adjust to them?
Yeah. So the first thing that I think that jumps out at me is I feel like the powers that be are talking less about making the game shorter and more about making the higher pace. And I think this might go that direction, right? Like all of these, the pitch clock is going to keep things moving for sure. But a bunch of these things are going to increase offense, which is great because that's exciting. But more offense means a longer game. So it's going to not surprise me a bit if we look at average game times even go up some, just because we've got a bunch more offense going on. So that's going to be interesting. I think it's not going to take teams very long to figure out how to use these rules to their advantage. And, you know, so one of the ways that that could happen is that you get 2 throws over to first base when you got a man on first. So if you're a decent base stealer and you can get the pitcher to throw over twice, now you can lead as much as you want. So I guess you could still get thrown out by the catcher, but like it's going to be pretty interesting if that all goes down the way it could. So, you know, if this mean, and then of course the shift limits, you know, I think that's only going to increase hits and offense. So we could see a big explosion of offense this year.
That's an interesting way of. Sorry, go ahead, BK.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's all. I feel like that's definitely, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, all of these rule changes are just to supercharge offense and, you know, to not necessarily to, as you said, to like take the game time and shorten it as much as it's to speed it up. And, you know, maybe it's still a 3-hour game, but instead of it being a 5-4 game, it's a 13-12 game.
Right.
And, you know, and, you know, whatever metric they're using to Rod Manfred's using, you know, ends up, you know, going the right direction. I don't know.
I mean,
your whip goes like, way up.
What I was going to get at is that like football has still, I mean, here I am comparing baseball to football. God bless. What am I doing here? Football is still a 60-minute game, but around about, you know, 2001, 2002, the Peyton Manning Colts offense started saying, well, hell, we can squeeze like 25 more plays in, and it's still a 60-minute game, and offense just gradually started exploding after that, you know, and it's still a 60-minute game. You know, time frame's still the exact same. It kind of seems like baseball is trying to find ways to make more action happen within the framework of the traditional nine-inning game.
Right. Well, it's 27 outs, and so, yeah. You know, if you make outs harder to come by, then, you know, by and large, you will have, you know, the desired outcome.
Yep, absolutely. And it is 27 outs before you reach the 10th inning, which now will have immediately, ad infinitum for regular season games at least, a runner on second base to start immediately in 10th inning games. Not 12 inning games, but immediately in the 10th inning of games. Which was cemented into place today. Which
are they doing that for the playoffs too?
They're not, because the playoffs. They realize the playoffs are supposed to be, you know, quote unquote, pure baseball.
The playoffs are the real game, and the regular season is just do whatever.
It's filler. Let's get it done. Let's put the numbers in the box score and go from there. Yeah. So it's you know, it's going to be a different game this year. It is. And, you know, you can argue all you want about which way the rule changes have gone versus the history of baseball versus the recent history of baseball. Fact is, 2022 in particular, in part because Major League Baseball chose to tinker with the balls, offense was terribly down. Slugging was terribly down. Home runs were terribly down. And this is off the back of a couple year window where all of that was very, very much up. So they've given us enough variables where it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is that's going to be the defining variable about what drives scoring versus pitching in the 2023 season. But also whether or not one change is going to make the difference or all the changes are making the difference. But it's undeniable that we're going to start watching from opening day on, and for 6+ months, watch a lot of things that we haven't seen in Major League Baseball ever before or in a very long time. You know, it's been a long time since we've watched an elite left-handed hitter step to the plate and there'd be one second baseman just hung out to dry in between second and first base, and that left-handed hitter being able to just smoke round balls into right field for a single. Part of me kind of empathizes with them in that regard. I know, a much, much larger part of me is a big Joey Votto fan who wants to empathize with that. So I hope that's kind of what we see. But at the same point in time, I'm looking over there at Jonathan Indian, and I'm like, man, like, I hope you're doing, you know, squats and lunges, because you're going to be diving left and right all season long, buddy. I hope Graham Ashcraft has figured out a way to turn all of his ground balls into ground balls to the other side of the infield, because that's where the defense is. Those kind of things, the little nuance that, you know, you read about and you think it's going to happen, but suddenly you start tying it to certain individual players. Those kind of things are going to play out in a big sample throughout the course of this year. And it'll be very interesting to see how that impacts what the Reds do with building their team going forward. I joked on the pre-podcast also, you know, is this the era that we're going to finally see the speedy defender at second base who can steal a lot of bags return to the game? You know, we haven't seen that kind of player in forever. Though. He's got about – we got to sign Tony Womack for a 2-year deal and put him up there in leadoff. Yeah. You know, Yeah. Can you steal 60 bags with five fewer inches on the bases and cover enough ground at second base to make up for it?
Teach Billy Hamilton, have him go back to the infield.
Yeah, dude, Billy
Hamilton's going to be the MVP next year.
Billy at second base could be a four-win player next year, man. Seriously. That's
seriously.
Nice, right?
Yeah. With the new rule, like whoever signs him, he's gonna steal 100 bases next year, right?
Oh my gosh, he totally is.
Oh God, I hope the Reds front office got a front foot on this, right?
Let's see. Right. Yeah, let me look and let's find the prop. Now that sports betting is legal in Ohio, we can I can actually put some cheddar down on this.
Billy Hamilton over under 45 stolen bases next year. That's a good one.
That's interesting. Man. I'm looking at the FanGraphs and all the different projection systems, and they do not appear to have taken these rule changes into account.
Yeah, it's hard to have a backwards looking projection system and factor in all of this. Like, I don't know how you adjust anything for that. It'll be fascinating. I mean, it's baseball. Baseball is always fascinating. You always have freak seasons. Whether there are rule changes or not, I mean, sometimes they throw a helium ball in there one year and you look up at what 2019 was and everybody hit 74 home runs. There's going to be some fun quirks about this upcoming season, and the Reds have enough good players or enough future players to where we might have some just weird anomaly, if I could speak, that will pop up and make it be interesting in that own, its own right. So, I mean, that's why we're still here talking about him, right?
We could even break 75 wins if we're lucky.
Hey, how about this? How about they don't start 3-18?
That'd be nice. I like that.
Jonathan India and Tyler Stevenson stay healthy.
Good plan.
The three young pitchers emerge. Jake Fraley is real. Joey Votto's back. And God forbid they add at the July trade deadline. You know,
Wick, like, not only do you need to buy the team, but you're going to have to be GM also.
Oh, God bless. I've got kids. I want to be lazy and drink beer. That's too much pressure, man. Damn it. How about I do a podcast about it? That sounds much more efficient, right? Much more efficient.
Yeah, they'll listen.
So, all right. Well, Brian, BK, thank you both for joining me on the Walks Will Haunt podcast, not the Red Reporter podcast, though I hope Walks Will Haunt will pop up in the RSS feeds of everybody who has subscribed to the Red Reporter podcast of old. We kept that active in part because I forgot to look at my bank statement and just kept renewing SoundCloud month to month. But that means we still have access to all of our old episodes. So if you ever want to go back and dig into all the stupid shit we said 5 years ago, it's there, damn it. It's there.
I cannot imagine that anyone would ever want to do that, but I appreciate you making it possible.
But you never know. Hey, SB Nation deleted all their comments when they upgraded their comment system. So if you ever want to hear old RR discussions, you might have to go back to the podcast to hear what the hell we were yelling about.
The podcast is the only might be the only way to get it then. Wow.
The only medium. Oh, but I will say this. I will say this, and I'll end on this also. We've got some exciting stuff about the podcast upcoming and who we're partnering with and who we'll be working with and who we'll hopefully be overlapping with and sharing with also, because you know, the SB Nation world of baseball writing over the last 10 to 15 years has produced a lot of weird things, a lot of awesome things, a lot of bad business models, a lot of frustrating business models. They've made a lot of changes in what they have chosen to support going forward, but they're unwillingness to kind of continue to support podcasts has kind of spawned something that I'm not sure would have happened otherwise, which is kind of a little bit of a continuity between a lot of the podcasts that were produced by SB Nation blogs. And we're hoping to have something pretty unique that will be coming out as the baseball season is kind of dawning again for 2023 in the coming weeks. And so stay tuned for that. We'll have an update on that, and we'll be a part of that when it drops. And I'm excited about it. It's something that I have fun doing, and whether or not the Reds are ever good at baseball, baseball carries itself well enough to where I'm going to enjoy it for the long term and continue to find ways to talk about it, interact with it. So stay tuned for that, and I'll have more updates on the next episode, which hopefully we can get around to putting out next week also. So that said, Brian, BK, thank you both for joining me tonight. I think we at least shook the rust off of podcasting and tried our best to figure out what the heck the Reds have at the moment. That's going to take a lot more digging into later because there's so much new stuff and so much unknowns that we're going to have a lot to figure out in the months going forward. But for both you guys, I'm Wick. Thank you guys for listening to us. Like and subscribe where you can find us. You'll find us more places in the coming weeks also. I'll tease that once again. But thanks for listening.